I think Rob has actually done a fabulous job of presenting my case already. I was going to talk to you about healthcare and international development and why it's a good investment. But you've done a fabulous job of listing some of the reasons that, or some of the areas we should focus on. So the one that affects people who are the poorest and neediest, the things that affects large numbers of people. We all need healthcare, and something that we're well placed to do. There's an extraordinary number of interventions that are used in wealthier countries that can be very easily translated into less developed and lower cost settings. So I think Robert's done a great job. Thank you very much.
Wasn't that good? Done it a second time.
But if you talk to social welfare experts, you know, they will say that healthcare and the cost of healthcare, particularly catastrophic healthcare costs, is the single most important reason why people in developing countries fall into poverty. So addressing the cost of healthcare is absolutely fundamental to addressing poverty. If you talk to microfinance organisations, they too will say that the single most important reason why people are unable to pay their loans and why businesses fail, these micro-enterprises fail, is because people become unwell and they just cannot deal with the cost of healthcare. So the whole area of healthcare is just fundamental to people's lives, its livelihoods and economic growth in a whole range of countries, and it's why the World Health Organization and the World Bank together and all the countries that are signatories, endorsed a plan to have universal health cover, which would provide affordable healthcare for everyone. So I think the fact that there's a need for healthcare is pretty clear. In 2013, the Lancet published a landmark report that looked at improvements in healthcare and how they had impacted the global economy. And they estimated that improvements in healthcare had actually accounted over the 10 years to 2011, actually accounted for fully one quarter of the growth in full income in developing countries. So an incredible impact on the economies of these countries. And bear in mind, in most of these places, healthcare is probably only 5 or 6% of the economy. So to have that contribution, to contribute one quarter of the growth, the economic growth in these in full income in these countries, it's a really staggering impact. And they also estimated that the returns on investment in healthcare over the next 20 years, so proper investments in healthcare in developing countries over the next 20 years could produce a 9 to 20-fold return on that investment. So 9 to 20-fold investment on return on investment from healthcare. So I think that's a pretty good measure. I'm not sure how it stacks up against some of your other other charts. And, you know, not every one of those investments is going to be perfect. I'm not sure that I would go as far as to say that 75% of investments are not perfect, but certainly I think when we see a lot of evaluations, that means people are doing research and investigation. They're trying new things. And I think trying new things is quite good. So we just need to be a little bit careful about how we interpret these stats. Like 75% of interventions may not be right.
Yeah, health tends to do better. It's the social stuff is trickier, but yeah.
Thank goodness. I should have just asked Rob to do my presentation. Excellent. Health tends to be better. We like that. But I just wanted to put on the table, and perhaps this is not what I'm supposed to be talking about, but that's all right, that there is a lot that needs to be done for the measurement to really catch up with the ambitious goals of effective altruism. So, I mean, one of the enormous benefits of effective altruism is that it has been forcing people who are playing in the health space, in the international development space, NGOs and so on, to really lift their game in terms of how they measure their performance and their impact. And I think that's a fantastic thing. But there's still quite a long way to go. And I think when people are using the information that comes from some of these evaluations and measures and so on, I think just I would encourage a little bit of caution. For a start, I'm not quite sure the measures are perfect yet. And I'll give you a couple of examples of the way that measures in healthcare have evolved over time. So it used to be that we all just looked at the number of lives saved. Seems like a fairly obvious thing to do. And what we found as a result of doing that was that actually a lot of money was going to old people because it's a larger number of people, so you can probably save them. And not so much money was going to younger people and younger people's diseases and challenges. So then this concept of the number of life years saved came about. So a younger person was worth more. If you saved the life of a younger person, it was worth more because you saved more life years. So this whole concept of a life year saved came about. So that seemed to make sense. But then we realised we were only talking about mortality and deaths. You know, we could actually improve people's quality of life, but that was just sort of wasn't counted. You know, if you make people happier or healthier for a time, but only just, that wasn't really counted. It's only if you save that life. So this concept of DALYs came about, disability-adjusted life years. More recently, we've moved on from that. We started putting a dollar value on these things. We talk about the economic impact and the economic value that we've created. And I think even in relation to that, we've come to the conclusion maybe that's not the right measure. You talked about measuring good, and I'm not really sure we know what measuring good quite is. Is it environmental diversity? Is it happiness? Is it well-being? I don't think we're quite there with understanding. And if you listen to that evolution in how the measures of health and what we consider a good health outcome have changed, you can see how that's, even in one sector, how much it's changed. So how difficult it is to start comparing across sectors. I guess another thing I'd add into this is that the measurement is probably imperfect. To give you an example, the Fred Hollows Foundation is one of the things we've done for a very long time is train doctors, and we train those doctors to go on and provide surgeries. A doctor might provide surgeries for 30 years. They might deliver 700 surgeries a year, cataract surgeries. Cataract is the leading cause of blindness. So we, as an organisation, have often focused on that because it is something that can be addressed through a cost-effective intervention. They'll go on and deliver 21,000 surgeries in their career. So we train that doctor. Do we count those 21,000 surgeries as an NGO? Is that our impact? Or is it maybe just the surgeries they delivered for a couple of years? Because, you know, someone else has got to pay for those. We might not be paying for them forever. They might go and do something. So I think there's a lot of question marks about how we actually count for that. In practice, we more or less look at the impact of what we do, how long we support that surgeon, and we might count it for another 2 years. It's probably a conservative thing to do, but it seems appropriate in the context. Is it appropriate to count 30 years worth of surgeries for that person? I'm not really sure. So I think there's a lot of, and if you go in and start comparing the way that different organisations are measuring their own impact, you might start to see a little bit of detail in there that is perhaps unexpected and perhaps not as comparable as you might think. There's another challenge, of course, is that measurement is incomplete. So again, going back to the work of the Fred Hollows Foundation, we invested 25 years ago in establishing some IOL factories in a couple of countries, so Eritrea and Nepal. So IOLs are the lenses that you insert in a person's eye when you do cataract surgery. You take out the bad lens, I suppose, and put in a lens called an intraocular lens, so an IOL. So we established a couple of factories to manufacture those lenses, and of course that has been a huge economic boost for Eritrea and for Nepal. You know, so in Nepal it's probably the most, you know, sophisticated manufacturing operation there. In Eritrea it's been the most important source of foreign currency for that country for some time. So but we're an eye health organisation. Yeah, so we don't really run around and think about, well, what's been the labour force impact on these factories? They've had these extra ongoing benefits for the economy in those two countries, providing jobs, you know, export dollars and so on. We don't count those. We focus on eye health. What's the impact on blindness? So there's many ongoing effects of the things that NGOs do that probably don't get counted by them because it's not necessarily in their strategy. So there can be a lot of other benefits that we may not see. Just two more comments. I think one observation is that the cost of sort of collecting a lot of data can be quite a challenge. There was one estimate that I saw recently around the Sustainable Development Goals. So these have replaced the Millennium Development Goals. There's Millennium Development Goals, there are 18 of them, seemed manageable. Sustainable Development Goals, I think the latest number was 169 targets, quite a courageous plan. I saw one estimate recently that suggested to collect all the data just to monitor progress against those goals. Just monitoring progress against those goals was going to cost $254 billion to collect that data. Now, that is twice the global annual budget on international development. So you have to ask yourself, how much data should we be collecting and how much can we collect? So I think it's really a case of going, what's appropriate and should we be so ambitious? I was thinking about the comment about the impact study and obviously the research that your team does around impact studies. Of course, and even sometimes there's real practical challenges. We've been trying to do an impact study in Pakistan for about the last 6 months, and we can't actually get our consultants into Pakistan right now. So sometimes there's practical challenges that just come in the way. And just the final thought was around innovation, and I think trying to find the balance between supporting interventions that are proven and effective and have all the data, and balance that with the need to support innovation where perhaps there isn't the good data. It's new ideas, you're trying new things, some might work, some might not. And the importance of innovation in healthcare, as in any other sector, is critical. So I think it's having a recognition that sometimes it's okay to make mistakes, as long as we can invest in the long-term outcomes. Anyway, I went completely off topic, but that was fun. thank you.